From the studios of WEKU on the campus of Eastern Kentucky University, it's time for Eastern Standard. Hello, I'm John Hingsbergen. Our topic this week is economic development in Eastern Kentucky. And just this week, the Appalachian Regional Commission awarded $250,000 to Kentucky Highlands Investment Corporation. That organization is in charge of coordinating the Anti-Poverty Promise Zone program in 8 Eastern Kentucky counties. And taking a look at the map, if anyone is aware of where these counties happen to be located, the WEKU's signal kind of, pretty well perfectly covers that region. We are talking about Bell, Clay, Harlan, Knox, Leslie, Letcher, Perry, and Whitley counties, the 8 counties that are part of one of the promise zones. There are 5 promise zones that were announced by President Obama, and Kentucky is able to benefit from being named to participate in that program. And with us to discuss economic development, Promise Zones SOAR, Shaping Our Appalachian Region. It's taken me a little while to get that acronym down, but with us we have actually 4 guests. And with us in the studio today, we have Justin Maxson, president of the Mountain Association for Community Economic Development. Justin is also a member of the SOAR Planning Committee. He's a UK grad, and he is, here with us in the studio. Justin, thank you so much for being with us.
It's great to be here.
Likewise, we have from the same organization, MACED, I'm learning to say, M-A-C-E-D, Ivy Brashear. And Ivy is the communications associate for MACED and an EKU alum from Perry County. Ivy, thanks for being with us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Also with us, Ian Moores, our neighbor here at WEKU. He's the executive director of EKU's Center for Economic Development, Entrepreneurship, and Technology, pronounced SEDIT. Ian is also director for the Center for Appalachian Regional Engagement and Stewardship CARES. Ian, thanks for being with us.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Lots of alphabet soup that we'll be tossing around here today in terms of identifying all these organizations. So I'll try to keep us on track and make sure people know what we're talking about. Also, on the telephone line from Frankfurt, the commissioner of the Department for Local Government, Tony Wilder. Tony served as Boyle County Judge Executive for over 14 years, as well as Boyle County's circuit clerk for 6 years, and his agency spearheads all federal and state grant projects in the state of Kentucky. Tony, thank you for being with us.
My pleasure. Good morning.
And Tony, let me ask you first, before we get into more detailed conversation, to help us define some of these terms. We're hearing SOAR, we're hearing Promise Zones. Just help us sort all that out. I guess we should start with the Promise Zone initiative.
Well, the Promise Zone designation, as you know, and in your intro there, is going to be a limited regional preference by the federal government, and we're fortunate that Kentucky Highlands has a history of administering a program like this. They under the Clinton administration administered the Enterprise Zone, which really was a boon to that area in South Central Kentucky, not so much in Appalachia. Lots of jobs created, lots of economic development created there as well during that. Now the Enterprise Zone is pretty much a different animal, though, because the Enterprise Zone actually had something like a $40 million allocation towards seeing the goals reached in that particular zone. But the Promise Zone will be there'll be a preference given to what we would consider these substantive eligible projects. We hope most are economic development related, and the preference meaning that those federal agencies that we administer funds for here in the state, that we're the conduit for, like HUD and ARC and some other agencies, would, if the projects are eligible, there will be a preference given during the vetting process in terms of approving those projects.
All right, that's Tony Wilder, Commissioner for the Department of Local Government for the Commonwealth of Kentucky. We're going to continue our conversation. We get a little bit more background on what we are discussing here today. We discuss economic development for Eastern Kentucky. Let me first mention that you can send us an email if you have a question or a comment or even a personal story about this topic. The email address, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. We have a Twitter account at WEKUEST. Send us a tweet there with your message if you can get it into 140 characters. Post on the WEKU Facebook page, or feel free to call in at 800-621-8890. That's 800-621-8890. Now, before we begin to talk a little bit more about these issues, let's talk about this issue of the Promise Zones. Eastern Kentucky has just one of five communities across the U.S. in the first phase of an initiative the Obama administration hopes will spur economic growth. Reporter Matt Laszlo filed this story for WEKU in January of this year.
So-called Promise Zones are intended to give depressed communities a leg up in securing federal dollars. According to U.S. Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack, the Kentucky Highlands Investment Corporation won out in part because it spread across eight counties in central Appalachia.
They have sought and obtained private sector investment to create a loan fund that will help create new business opportunities. They also recognize the importance of workforce development and skills development through a commitment to education, and they're willing to hold themselves accountable to results.
Administration officials say Eastern Kentucky stood out because it's already doing impressive work. Republican Congressman Hal Rogers represents the district and welcomes the federal assistance.
These areas are some of the worst, if not the worst, economic zones we have. In my district, the coal demise has been dramatic. Thousands of miners now laid off in that whole area of East Kentucky.
Other Kentucky lawmakers aren't as rosy. Both of the state's Republican senators attended the event where President Obama announced the winners. But Senator Rand Paul says tax relief would go further than a government grant. GOP Congressman Ed Whitfield says other administration policies are hurting the region's coal economy.
Unfortunately, we wouldn't need as much economic assistance if he would not have such extreme policies on the way energy is produced in America, so that we literally cannot build a new coal-fired plant in this America, in this country, because of his policies.
Still, Rogers lauds the announcement.
The aid from federal agencies is welcome, and it will be useful, I think.
The administration says it's still waiting for Congress to pass legislation to ease the tax burden in these promise zones. For WEKU News, I'm Matt Laszlo in Washington.
This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. We're talking economic development in Eastern Kentucky, and we're interested in hearing from you. But, of course, we need to hear from our guests here in the studio. Let's just maybe begin with the general issue of the economic state of Eastern Kentucky. Where are the issues and where are the problems? Again, we've identified the counties, Bell, Clay, Harlan, Knox, Leslie, Letcher, Perry, and Whitley. What's the problem there that creates the need for all of this assistance? That's Justin, yes. Maxson.
I guess I want to start with saying it's a special place. It's a region that has a bunch of assets, and it's real easy to start thinking about Eastern Kentucky from a deficit standpoint. There are lots of challenges. We have to deal with those, and I just think it's easy to forget the fact that some of the best and the brightest in the country are from the region. We've got incredibly diverse natural resources, important pockets of entrepreneurship. So I just say all that to say that one of the ways we think about development in the region is trying to start from your assets. But it's also a really hard time in East Kentucky. We've lost more than 7,000 coal jobs over the last 2 years, and there are a lot of individuals, families, and communities that are struggling. Of course, the coal industry has been in long-term decline. Really, over the last 30 years, we've lost significant employment from the industry, and I think the primary challenge is how do we grow a diverse economy that creates broadly held wealth for folks who need it. So
those coal jobs will not be coming back, correct?
Well, I do not have a crystal ball, but all of the evidence supports that coal in East Kentucky is increasingly uncompetitive, particularly with lower cost Western coal, which is about half as much, and the large amount of natural gas has just made East Kentucky coal less uncompetitive. In fact, it's less competitive at the moment than Western Kentucky coal, which hasn't had the same production losses, but East Kentucky coal is just increasingly expensive to get out of the ground. So that means it's unlikely to come back to where it was. Exactly what will happen in the future is less clear.
And when we talk about statistics, I mean, unemployment, poverty rate, and so forth, we have a lot of figures we toss around. In the introduction to the show, I had mentioned that the poverty rate in Appalachian Kentucky from 2007 through 2011 was 24.8%, according to the Appalachian Regional Commission. Compared to the national poverty rate of 14%, and in some eastern Kentucky counties, well above 30%. That's still a valid figure, Ian Morse?
Yes, it is. And I think of areas like Harlan, which have a very high unemployment rate right now. But I think, you know, Justin's right. This is an area that's rich in natural resources and has a lot of assets. I think of the number of good folks who are working in these counties that are doing very progressive things. You know, in Middlesboro and in Bell County, there's an exciting downtown revitalization project that's taking place. There's also some interesting things going on in Corbin with their Main Street program. There's also initiatives such as the Trail Town Initiative out of the state of Kentucky that's trying to help folks take advantage of what's available to them to bring in tourists and to bring folks from out of the region, but also for those folks that live there to celebrate their heritage and celebrate what is there. So, I've been in Kentucky for 5 years, and I've been very impressed with Eastern Kentucky and the folks that live out there and how much they care about their place and where they are. I've often said that, you know, we need to have an economic development model that matches the place where they are, not where someone might want them to be. And I think that that's an important initiative of the Promise Zone is going to look at how can we help folks to take a look at where they are and where they want to be.
And that's going to bring additional resources to the area. I'd like to talk about what the Promise Zone initiative is going to bring into the area with all four of our guests here on this week's Eastern Standard. We encourage you to send us a question, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Send us a tweet at 889-WEKU or pick up the phone and call 800-621-8890. Your questions, your comments, and your personal stories. If you live in one of these communities, feel free, and we encourage you to call 800-621-8890. More of Eastern Standard in just a moment on the WEKU stations. This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. I'm John Hingsbergen. Our guest today, Tony Wilder, Commissioner of the Department for Local Government. We have Ian Moores, Executive Director of the EKU Center for Economic Development, Entrepreneurship, and Technology, as well as Director for the Center for Appalachian Regional Engagement and Stewardship. And we have with us Justin Maxson, President of the Mountain Association for Community Economic Development, and a member of the SOAR Planning Committee, and Ivy Brashear, Communications Associate for MESED. And we encourage you to get on board and be part of our conversation. Folks, let's see, where do we go in terms of talking about the resources that would be coming into the area as a result of the economic promise zones? This means money, I assume?
Yes. Federal dollars are committed. There are several federal agencies that are aligning several existing programs to give preferential points in grant applications to organizations applying within the Promise Zone for activities related to creating jobs, increasing economic activity, improving educational opportunities, leveraging private investment, and reducing violent crime.
Is there a set total amount that's designated for this zone from these eight counties?
Not that I'm aware of, but Commissioner Wilder might be able to answer that question.
Okay, we'll get back to him in just a quick second. Are we back on the line? No. We will clarify that a little bit. But yes, Justin.
You know, I think the Promise Zone is a really important step in the right direction and represents a sort of commitment at some scale that the resource will have to move forward. I also think there's no one single initiative that will be the answer to what ails East Kentucky, and that it's got the right principles behind it in the sense that it's engaging local folk and trying to figure out what the right solutions are and then trying to put resources around those ideas. So I just say that to say I think the Promise Zone is a critical opportunity, and it's just got to be part of a broader set of activities that really create economic opportunity, like supporting entrepreneurs, like investing in sectors like energy efficiency and local foods and other economic opportunities in the region, like creating community processes like this and SOAR that really make sure the right set of folks are at the table trying to be clear about what those opportunities are.
But we're not talking about a large money just being dumped into the communities. Is that correct? The idea is this: any funds that come in are brought in as part of efforts to support infrastructure, perhaps, as it were, economic infrastructure to help the region?
Absolutely. I think in the areas of entrepreneurship, you know, you have Kentucky Highlands and MACID and SCED, which are organizations that are community development financial institutions, or CDFIs. So they're able to make loans, microloans. They have existing loan packages already that are serving these areas. So I think it's tying in those kinds of existing initiatives that are in place, along with the local planning that's taking place right now. Allison Davis, who's director of the Center for Economic Development in Kentucky and the College of Agriculture, is leading the local planning effort right now. So there's local planning meetings that are taking place in those eight counties, as well as a follow-up with regional planning meetings to discuss what the needs are from those counties, what those people see they need to do to move forward within the scope of the Promise Zone initiative.
Tony Wilder, Commissioner of the Department for Local Government. I don't think you were in a position to hear the question as I was posing it earlier, but what about the amount of money? Is there a set amount of funds that's going to come in from the federal government as part of the Promise Zone initiative?
Yes, and I apologize for the technical difficulties earlier. We get a state allocation of, for instance, from the Housing and Urban Development Department, and that's somewhere going to be around $22, $23 million. And within that, we have some subset categories of money that we apply to things like economic development, housing, and those kinds of things, infrastructure, public facilities.
Now, Tony, let me ask you this. You say we get that. Is that a regular thing? Those are funds that come in regularly, or is this something new related to the Promise Zones?
No, that would be our regular allocation. Now, we may receive extra allocations from Congress. Most of the time it occurs when there's a disaster. But with this Promise Zone designation, and we really haven't had all of our guidance provided to us yet from Washington. But one could speculate that there might be an opportunity to get an extra allocation if we have the need. So I don't know that for sure. But we will rely on our normal allocation to fund projects in that area, if they're eligible.
When we talk about the Promise Zone program, is this something new that came from the Obama administration?
Yes. As far as I know, yes.
And as a result, I guess there are politics involved. And I understand that many in the Republican Party, for instance, would have resisted accepting funds of that type. And it's somewhat unique. And we, by the way, had invited Representative Hal Rogers to be part of the show, but the schedule just did not work out for him. We're grateful for their even considering. But would you agree with that, Tony, that, I mean, again, I know you're not going to want to get into a political position, but there are some political issues about all
this? The political dynamics are that there is a conservative element that wants to cut government spending, but we are very fortunate. We have a very objective, moderate, and thoughtful congressman in that district who realizes that it's not just a federal giveaway, it's federal investment. And I admire him greatly, and he has helped East Kentucky and Appalachia a great deal by being there, and Kentucky.
Let's talk about some specifics that may occur in the region, and I know the Shaping Our Appalachian Region initiative or program, which was announced in October or so, and there was a meeting, a summit in December. There was some talk from both Governor Beshear and Representative Rogers about some of the issues, and I've alluded to them before, internet connectivity, broadband, essentially, as well as the Mountain Parkway. Where do those kinds of projects fall into the picture here?
Well, we're going to, of course, in the governor's budget, there has been money set aside for a state's contribution to the what they're calling the Black Fiber Project in southeast Kentucky. The Mountain Parkway project could involve some what we call Appalachian Highway funds. It will be mostly federal funds, I'm sure, that will be given to our transportation cabinet. But the SOAR concept, if you remember, the governor's budget also had allocations in there to fund this SOAR project and to continue to fund its development and setting up the infrastructure and the apparatus for SOAR itself, and also set aside some money, coal severance money, for a development fund. And if you remember, if you attended SOAR or are aware of what the information that was presented to us at SOAR, the Ironfields of Minnesota, the two representatives from there, had mentioned a fund they had set up in the 1940s that had great benefit for that area when they would go through their bus time. And so we're looking forward to seeing all that come together for SOAR.
We're looking to other programs elsewhere as samples, yes, or examples to plug into.
Right. And with most major projects, almost any public project anymore, it takes collaboration and other leverage funds. And that's where SOAR will play a role, and the federal agency will play a role, and the state will.
Ian Morris.
Well, I was just going to say that, you know, with the Black Fiber Project, what I think, you know, communities are looking at this is hoping that you're going to see a more service providers come into the region.
The fiber is going to be, it's essentially dark fiber, not lit up by lasers yet to
well,
the communications.
You know, companies will be able to plug into that fiber. Okay. And so you hope, you know, the hope there is that companies are going to move in and they're going to take advantage of that. And obviously with more of that, with more of that happening and that possibility, then you have the chance for more competition in the marketplace to lower the price. You know, you look at what broadband would cost somebody who lives in, let's say, Harlan County. You know, that's probably $50 a month, maybe close to $100 a month.
If they can get it, right? Aren't there regions that actually can't get high-speed service?
Well, and if they can afford it. If they can afford it. And so I think that we want to hope to see that as well as companies that could come in and plug into that fiber and create jobs. That would be another outcome of that. So I think it's a very good step forward. And I think along with the road issue, as you drive across so many of these roads, being able to get that, you know, the infrastructure up and then having the roads to be able to get goods moving in and out more efficiently, I think we'll do in the long run. Will benefit the region.
I guess when you talk about companies coming in using that broadband infrastructure, the hope would be some biggies coming in with a lot of jobs associated with them. Of course, benefits for small businesses and community businesses that are already in place, but you would hoping to help replace those 7,000 lost coal jobs.
I think so, but I also think you need it, as Justin will say, economic diversification. You need a multi-pronged approach. And so entrepreneurship is important to that. For those entrepreneurs that are going to be able to start up a business in Letcher County that are going to be able to plug into this high-speed network, that's going to be a huge advantage for them to be able to operate out of Eastern Kentucky.
Justin Maxson?
You know, I would say we know a lot about what works. And part of the challenge is try to figure out how to align our resources with the right ideas, with a good plan, at enough scale over time. So, you know, we have to have projects that are the right projects. Sometimes we're going to get them wrong. That's economic development. But what's important to me about SOAR is it's the potential to create the right sort of process where you engage local folk in trying to figure out the right ideas, that you align those ideas with enough resources over time that you can see the sort of results add up. There's not going to be a silver, I mean, there won't be one solution that answers the 7,000 jobs. I'm a foundation for a new economy. And economic development shouldn't first be about projects. We've got to have good ones. They're essential. It's got to be about a process that creates lots of the right projects over time. And that's a little bit of a shift in how we think about economic development.
Does some of that involve then training educational components to bring the workforce to the level of skills that would be needed to support new industry?
Yes, it certainly does. You know, it's important, like Justin said, to remember that it's not just about projects. It's not just about bringing jobs in. It's about creating jobs at home, and it's about teaching people technical things that they need to know about operating small businesses and how they can make those businesses successful and create 10 jobs instead of 100 in several different places from several different businesses.
And I'd also add on, there are local initiatives right now that are taking place. You know, two that come to mind is the Hire Our Miners Every Day, the HOME program out of Eastern Kentucky Concentrated Employment Program, EKSEP, that is trying to take those unemployed miners. They will pay for retraining them. They will also pay for a time that the employee is with a new company to get them into a new job. That's a tall order because some of these folks are coming out at salaries that are $80,000 a year, and they're having to look at a job that might be at $50,000 a year. And that's a big shift in you think about having a family. That's a big shift for someone. Another initiative that's underway in Eastern Kentucky is the Kentucky Teleworks Program, which is allowing people to work from home. And there's training associated with that, and they can get jobs and work across the country. You know, the companies that are involved with the Kentucky Teleworks that are from out of state are very impressed with the people that are working with Kentucky Teleworks and with their companies. And they say they have a strong work ethic and they work hard. And I think that's I think that's where we can go with entrepreneurship, is we know we have good people that want to work hard, that want to stay where they are, and they can. And that's what I think entrepreneurship represents for many folks.
Yeah, and I think it's also about they want to stay. Yes. I think people forget that aspect sometimes, that if you provide these opportunities for people in Appalachia, in Eastern Kentucky, they're going to stay there because they want to stay.
This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. We're talking economic development in Eastern Kentucky. Your input, your questions, your comments, your stories, we'd love to talk with you if you're in one of these communities, Bell, Clay, Harlan, Knox, Leslie, Letcher, Perry, and Whitley. And, of course, across the Commonwealth, people are concerned, I'm sure, about the economic health of that region. It's been a major source of Kentucky's economy at one time, and we're interested in hearing from you. 800-621-8890. Post on our Facebook page. Send a tweet at 889 at WEKUEST. Let's use the correct Twitter account there. We have a number of them, at WEKUEST, and the email WEKUEasternstandard@gmail.com. We do have a Facebook post asking, Can someone here compare and contrast the difference in tax relief and tax reinvestment? I don't think we've spoken about taxes, but is this a factor in this area?
Oh, gosh. I think the foundations of a strong economy requires smart public investment. I appreciate the congressman's distinction between investment and a giveaway that I think that the commissioner had quoted. You know, I think building a strong economy in East Kentucky will require smart public investments in the key things that will grow that economy, in workforce development, in infrastructure, in process, in projects, and that requires smart investment.
We haven't heard from Tony Wilder in a bit. Tony, reaction to that question about the role of taxes?
Well, Justin covered that part of it about the taxation part, but the other part is, and I don't know if the term was used by the person on the Facebook, but tax incentives are important as well, and you have to balance that out. You know, we use tax incentives all over the state to do economic development, and I think we'll have to be smart and apply the proper incentives in East Kentucky because it's difficult to bring industry into East Kentucky. It always has been, and we in the public sector are always attempting to apply incentives properly and appropriately to try to entice folks in.
When we talk about incentives, we're talking about the carrot that's held out.
Yes.
For businesses. Come to Kentucky, come to this region, and then it would be regional. It would be specific to that region. If you locate here, build your new Amazon distribution center or whatever in this region, you would get a tax break for a certain number of years.
Yes, and it can run from, you know, the employment taxes to the property taxes and those kinds of things where they're applicable.
We're interested in hearing from you, our listeners, especially in the final segment of today's Eastern Standard. We're talking economic development in Eastern Kentucky. And why is this important? Is it important to you as you hear our conversation today? Are you in one of these Promise Zone counties, Bell, Clay, Harlan, Knox, Leslie, Letcher, Perry, or Whitley? And do you care about this issue? We'd like to hear from you with your questions, with your comments, with your personal stories. Justin, did you have a 15-second comment?
Yeah, I think tax incentives are a key arrow in the quiver of economic development. The challenge is that businesses need lots of other positive things around them, and often incentives alone just aren't enough. They're one of the key the key tools, but that's why investment is so important.
I think there's some other tools we can talk about here when we come back. 800-621-8890. That's 800-621-8890. Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations.
We have a chance really unique to our campus, given our history in the region, to in partnership with our CARES program and some of the things that we're doing with SOAR, the Shaping Our Appalachian Region, the summit that was held last month. The great provider of opportunity is going to be access to education. So that's going to be our chief focus, is amplifying the opportunities and enhancing that access.
Eastern Kentucky University President Michael Benson talking about the university's role partnering with UK and Berea College on Promise Zones in the southeastern Kentucky. So there is the university component, the educational component, and actually, folks, what is the role of these educational institutions in as part of the Promise Zone initiative? Ian Morse.
For SEDIT, we are what is called an implementing partner. And so we are to, over the next 10 years, this is a 10-year commitment to these counties, we are to increase our technical education, so our entrepreneurship offerings, other initiatives we're working on, like the export initiative that we're working on now, as well as looking at assisting businesses every year and helping them to continue to grow. So those that are there, helping them, as well as supporting those new businesses. But like Commissioner Wilder said, it is still undefined, and so we're not locked into just those exclusive efforts on the behalf of SEDIT. We can certainly continue to, as the initiative goes forward, find other ways that we can bring in the resources of the university. And that, when we talk about the resources, we talk about our students and our faculty and applied learning out in these communities to help them continue to grow.
In what way is it benefited by the collaboration of these schools? And is it just these schools, UK, Berea, and
UK? Well, you've got Berea UK College. Berea College's Gear Up program and the Promise Neighborhood initiative out of Berea College, and Dreema Gentry, who's going to be working on high school graduation, college attainment. So those are the ways that Berea is involved. And then UK is also, through the Center for Economic Development in Kentucky, is going to be doing the economic development planning, as well as economic gardening, which is an initiative to do to locally grown businesses. So I think you're going to see a number of the ways that the university plays beyond just sort of the traditional role of an institution.
So each of the schools has its strengths, and they can bring those strengths to the table.
Absolutely.
We tossed out the term coal severance tax, a reference to that a few minutes ago. First of all, for the ignorant like myself, who came to Kentucky just a couple of years ago, and I'd never really heard of coal severance taxes. I understand it's a concept that is supposed to bring some revenue into the state, I guess, in exchange for the use of the natural resources of coal. And, of course, as the coal industry becomes less of an economic component, those funds are going down. But let's define what are coal severance taxes. Tony Wilder.
Well, the coal severance tax is simply this: for every ton mined, there is a tax levied on that mined coal, and then there's also another tax levied on the transportation of that coal. So all of that combines to make our coal severance. And I think it's around oh my goodness, the amount of money it used to be about $200 million a year. But it's gone down, way down now. And there's the formula is very complicated. A part of it half goes to the general fund, and then half is divided in the counties in two or three different programs. But it's way down now, of course.
So, and what is the role of the coal severance tax in this current effort to improve economic development? Ivy, I believe, has a comment.
Yeah, so MACED has done at least two reports about how the coal severance tax money can be used to establish a permanent fund. And what a permanent fund would do would take a portion of the coal severance tax each year and put that into a fund that would then generate interest, and you could use that money to for infrastructure projects, for economic development projects, various different things in the region to help with economic diversification.
For how long do we think that the coal industry is still going to be strong and bring in whatever it is currently bringing into the state in that fashion? Is the industry going to hold up for the next decades, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, 50 years?
For sure. I think the issue is no one knows exactly where it's going to go. It will definitely be much smaller than it's been. And often it's referred to as a low coal future, not a no coal. And that, as you said, then means the severance tax, that the severance tax revenue declines over time. And the challenge is, as it goes away, what replaces it. So this idea of a permanent fund is just to protect a piece of the revenue so it can grow over time. The challenge is, of course, there are great needs right now that our county governments and others have to spend the money. So there's just a tension in trying to figure out what is the best immediate way to use that investment of the severance tax the smartest way.
You talk about the tension. Is there a tension among counties that are not part of this Promise Zone region? There's a concern or competition. They don't want funds, for instance, to go away from the urban areas or all of the other counties in the state beyond the eight that are in this Promise Zone territory. Are there folks who oppose this effort as a result?
I wouldn't say folks are opposed. I think people want to see growth. But I think that folks, I certainly know from personal experience that there were counties wondering why they were not in the Promise Zone. And it was a very limited definition of how you put together this application. And there was a lot of thought given to that. And, as you look at Whitley County, it's a census tract of Whitley County. It sort of goes up and kind of almost divides the county in a sense. So it was really difficult. I applaud Kentucky Highlands for figuring that out and putting it together. And these counties all represent as well the high poverty, high unemployment. There's opportunity here for growth. And so I think that – go ahead, Justin.
It's why we can't look at the Promise Zone as the answer to the future of East Kentucky. It's a critical piece of the solution set, but it's only eight counties. And successful development will require regional collaboration. It mm-hmm. will require really engaged private actors across the region. It will require a strong role for the state. And I think the Promise Zone is a really important spotlight and a window into accelerating progress in a place. But why SOAR matters to me so much is that if we get it right, it really creates a state and regional effort that can benefit everybody in East Kentucky by creating a vision of what's possible, a vision of a brighter future. And that, to me, being ambitious about what's possible probably is more important than anything else.
Eastern Standard is an interactive program. We invite you to get on board with your questions, your comments, personal stories. If you're a resident of one of the counties included in the Promise Zones or in one of the counties not included and concerned about that, 800-621-8890. That's 800-621-8890. Send us a message by email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. You can send a tweet, wekuest, and post it on the website, actually. A listener has posted on using the discuss feature that goes along with the stories on our website. Mike has written, I am wondering about the wisdom of extending the Mountain Parkway to four lanes to Prestonburg when the access to there is okay. They have access to I-64 and US 23, both four-lane roads, and extending the Mountain Parkway to Hazard and Jenkins area. That would be more assistance to southeastern Kentucky than adding four lanes to Prestonburg and Pikeville. The role of the Mountain Parkway, Tony Wilder.
Well, that's a good point about those areas southeast of there. But, you know, given the fact that the Mountain Parkway exists in that area and it's four lane most of the way, it's always been a plan to four lane that. That's always been the hope to do that, and it's going to go all the way into Pike County one day if all the phases are complete, and it has enormous potential there. I think to as it was mentioned before, moves goods and services better than before. So maybe one day we can shift the direction and move south there a little bit. Mm-hmm.
What elements are we missing in terms of areas that will assist with the economic development in the region? We've got telecommunications, essentially, or broadband. We've got good old-fashioned transportation and highways on asphalt. What else have we not mentioned so far?
Well, I think an important thing to remember is energy efficiency and everything that goes along with that. Today, in fact, we have the Clean Energy Opportunity Act being discussed in Frankfurt, and this is something that would increase energy efficiency projects. So these would allow for contractors to do retrofits on government buildings, on businesses, on homes, to be more efficient, to use less energy, which would save these people money on their energy bills, but it could also allow for these contractors to hire more people to create more jobs in the communities, homegrown jobs from the ground up.
I also think it's not necessarily missing, but it's sort of underlying all of this is our brain drain, and we're losing our best and our brightest in Eastern Kentucky. And so, you know, we need to be thinking about how we can keep them. And I know that the folks at CEDIC are working to have forums with youth to hear from the youth about how they can stay here in Appalachia. There's a program called Stay in Appalachia, which is youth coming together to think about how can they stay here. They love being in Eastern Kentucky. They love being in Appalachia. There's a lot to experience in Appalachia, and how can they stay there? So I think that will be I know it will be part of the SOAR, and I know it's part of the Promise Zone, is engaging our youth in this discussion to move the economy forward. And then I also want to add that we're also going to need leadership. We're going to need good leadership, both at the local elected officials and state and federal. I think we need good leadership to move our communities forward, to make sure that those local leaders are also engaging the youth and what they can do to grow their communities and move forward.
Let's go to the phone and talk to Vincent from Letcher County. Vincent, thanks for being part of Eastern Standard. Go ahead with your question, your comment, or your story.
Love your show. I have a quick question. Is the new or future tunnel project in Letcher County on US 119 a part of the SOAR project or not? They're supposed to build a brand new tunnel through Pine Mountain from Cumberland to Whitesburg, or Oven Fork, Kentucky to Whitesburg.
Sounds like Tony Wilder has a comment.
It's not particularly an element of SOAR, but it has been on our Appalachian Development Highway system for years. If that's the project I'm thinking about, it was going to be pretty costly. And one of the reasons it hasn't been done is because of the enormous match that has to be attached to it from our state monies.
All right, Vincent?
Well, wouldn't that be a pretty good idea to bring it in here for tourism and also tourism jobs and the hotels and the gas stations to help promote economic growth in Letcher County? Since it would be the third largest tunnel project in America?
Oh, I agree. That would be the result. It's just those tunnel projects are so costly, and the way the formula is set up, the state match was going to be more than the state could handle at this point with all the other needs, and it remains a potential project.
All right, Vincent, thank you so much for raising that issue on Eastern Standard. Here's an email from Penny. While listening to your panel discussion regarding SOAR, I'd like to comment on the problem of the number of landlords who are collecting many federal dollars for Section 8 housing, but are providing substandard housing to many of the poor in this community. And she says this would be Clay County. That's her subject line. I feel that before additional monies come from our federal government, those in positions of responsibility should be charged with better management of the programs that are already in place. Justin nodding yes.
I just think SOAR will help unearth challenges and opportunities across the region. Whether it's that one or other ones. And I think what it does is it creates a vehicle, a place to do the right sort of planning and to direct investment over time. So I don't doubt her concern about that issue. And what matters to me is we take advantage of the difficult situation the region is in to redefine our relationship with economic development. And SOAR, I think, does that.
Let's go quickly yes, go ahead, Tony.
If I may, John, to follow up on what Justin's saying, this really is an unprecedented collaborative focus that we haven't had with SOAR. So as we develop SOAR, Justin's exactly right. We're going to have a chance to explore a lot of areas that before have been ignored.
Okay, let's go to London and talk to Jerry, who's on the line. Jerry, thanks for calling. Go ahead with your comment or question.
Yes, I was just want to mention these states that are booming right now from the oil, North Dakota, Texas. Why couldn't we have that in our state? We go in on private property and we mine the coal and we pay people for their land, and their coal to be mined. Why couldn't we do that with an oil industry in our state?
Or is that the gas industry that we're talking about now that has become part of Marcellus Shale and so forth? Yeah.
I think a lot of that has to do with geology. Some of the shale oil and gas that exists in Kentucky just isn't easily accessible, even with fracking. There was a gas industry in East Kentucky for a long time, and that sort of tapered off a little bit, and it just mostly has to do with access.
All right. We have just a couple of minutes remaining in today's Eastern Standard. Let me get everybody to just chime in for a few 30 seconds each or so with some comments about how are we going to know when all of this is successful, and what are the next steps in terms of Promise Zones, SOAR, and this issue of economic development in Eastern Kentucky. We'll start with Ian Morris.
I think the immediate next steps for the Promise Zone are the local planning efforts that are taking place right now that are just getting started. And then I think where we will know success is when we have matched up the what the local folks want with the federal dollars or federal programs to help those communities move forward. But it's a 10-year process. It's a long view at the issues, and I think it's going to be some time before we can begin to really measure success. But I think early on it's going to be looking at the planning.
That planning is going to be meetings, getting out into the community?
Yep, community forums that are getting ready to take place right now.
Okay. Justin.
Let's see. At its best, I think this effort is going to be hard, slow, and expensive. And some public acknowledgement of that is critical, and it's part of what I think SOAR has done. And not just SOAR, but what the conversation in the region has become. And so I really do see signs within the region, from the state, from the feds, that we're really aligning uniquely a different set of opportunities to create short-term and tangible results. So I'm hopeful.
Excellent. Ivy Brashear?
Yeah, I mean, just to tag on to that, you know, we're in this really special, critical moment where the tides are starting to turn a little bit. There are real opportunities being created every day. There are inspiring stories of people who are living in the region creating those opportunities, and I'm hopeful, as I have always been, that we will see success.
And Tony Wilder, I have 20 seconds for you.
Well, the key word is planning, and Ian mentioned that, and you know, we're not going to be successful if we're not, you know, strategic in our thinking with this money. So we've got to plan properly and as efficiently and expeditiously as we can apply that money and try to help.
Okay, thank you. Justin Maxson, Ian Moores, Tony Wilder, and Ivy Brashear for an interesting conversation. This program will be online on our website at weku.fm. You can listen there or download the podcast. Thanks to our associate producers, Richard Turner, Logan Riley, and Andrew Moorhead, who put together today's show. Our technical director, Joni Franklin. Julie Tennell handles the phones.